You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome you back. It is great to have all of you here. And certainly a busy day in addition to everything that we normally talk about. The Tiger Woods story has dominated not only news here in the United States, but around the world. And by now, most of you have heard this story. We will update it, hoping to get a medical update in a couple of minutes. One thing we have learned, and this is this could be characterized as a good sign. He was at the Harbor Hospital in L.A. He is being airlifted now to UCLA Hospital, which is in Westwood, right near Beverly Hills. And let's listen in to the Sheriff's Department giving us the latest on Tiger Woods.
Today at 7:12 in the morning, Lomita Sheriff Station received a call of a solo vehicle collision in Hawthorne Boulevard, north of Palos Verdes Drive. We arrived on scene at 7:18 a.m. and discovered the solo vehicle collision, and the sole occupant was, again, Tiger Woods. And deputies, at the time, they did not see any evidence of impairment, anything that of concern. Obviously, the life-saving measures that had to be taken for the occupant of the vehicle, and Chief Osby will speak to that regard. And it was a solo vehicle. Unfortunately, during the course of the investigation of this, there was another traffic collision that happened with people being looky loose. But that, thankfully, there was no injuries associated with that. The vehicle traveled several hundred feet from the center divider at the intersection and rested on the west side of the road in the brush. Sustained major damage to the vehicle. You've seen all the images of that. And with that, our Lomita Sheriff's Station will be conducting the traffic investigation, and it'll take from days to several weeks to get the whole thing together. Once the investigation is completed, we will provide a detailed report. It'll be available, you know, based on public record act request, and we will not discuss any further after that point. But at this point, I want to introduce Chief Darrell Osby, LA County Fire Department.
Good afternoon. I'm Fire Chief Darrell Osby of the Los Angeles County Fire Department. At approximately 7:22 this morning, resources from Los Angeles County Fire Station 106 received a report of a solo vehicle accident at the intersection of Hawthorne Boulevard and Palos Verdes Drive North in Rolling Hills Estates. Upon arrival at the scene of the incident with sheriffs on scene, resources and personnel from the Los Angeles County Fire Department observed a single rollover vehicle incident with one person trapped. The person trapped was extricated by the Los Angeles County Fire Department personnel. Earlier, it was stated that the jaws of life was utilized to extricate the person trapped. It was later determined by our personnel that a Holligan tool, which is used for prying, and an axe was also used to pry the person free from the vehicle. The person was packaged at the incident in stable condition with serious injuries, and because of the fact that they needed to be extricated, they were transported to Harbor UCLA Hospital because of the extrication, and Harbor Hospital is also a trauma center. As indicated earlier, there's also a second vehicle accident with no injuries. Thank you.
And the vehicle involved is a 2021 Genesis. It's a mid-size SUV. Para Español, a las 7:12 de la mañana en la calle Hawthorne, rumbo al norte por la intersección de Palos Verdes Drive, hubo un accidente automovilístico de un solo vehículo donde el vehículo volcó varias veces y cayó a las orillas del lado oeste de esa intersección. Y el ocupante...
So we continue to monitor the press conference in Los Angeles. So there were certainly some clarifications there that we were unaware of, but we'll continue to go back if anything changes. But it does seem like Tiger Woods has been now moved to a different hospital. Let me know when. I think that is it for the press conference. Why don't the one thing that is interesting is that he, you know, they like with all events, the first few minutes people don't always get the information right. So I think the sheriff was wise to clarify that. We are going to take a break here in a minute, and when we come back, the other day, some of you, I can't remember what night it was last week, Tuesday or Wednesday night. We talked to two legendary Florida figures, and for whatever reason, when we put them on together, this happens occasionally, the feeds were bleeding into one another, and we had a complete meltdown. So we decided it was important to get Leonard and Wilbur, Willie back on the program. So we are going to do that. When we come back, we're going to talk to two of the University of Florida's greatest players, two men who showed great courage in breaking the color barrier. We also will get to your phone calls a little bit later in the show, so if you want to call in now, we will take your calls at 855-242-7285. Back with much, much more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back, and we are so looking forward to this next segment as we continue to celebrate Black History Month. On December 17th, 1968, one of our next guests, Leonard George, became the first African-American to sign a scholarship with the University of Florida. The next day, Willie Jackson did the same, and the rest is history. Two of the most prominent and beloved and historic players in the University of Florida's history. Some of you, of course, got a chance to, we all did, to watch the offspring of Willie Jackson about 20 years later under a different coach. The gentlemen, thank you very much. Willie and Leonard, it's great to have you with us. Let me start with Leonard, and I want just to set the stage for both of you guys were very prominent high school stars. What brought you to the University of Florida, Leonard, as we say hello to you and Willie?
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay. Yeah, well, I would like to first say that my parents had a lot to do with that because, you know, one of the things they wanted me to get was to be close around and to get a good education. They had sent me to Jesuit High School in Tampa, and that was a Catholic private school. And so from that, when I had a chance, they say that, well, come to Florida. And because at that time, you know, we had no body in front of us to have to say, well, come on up there and we'll everything will be all right. It was like we were coming on to something very new. And so with my parents and they had a lot of Gator alumni in Tampa that wanted me to go to Florida. One of them were the Levy brothers. One was named Leonard, and the other one was named George. And so we always got a kick out of that say, well, you know, if you got you come to Florida, you'll always have those two twins with your same name.
Willie, what about you?
Yes, I was fortunate to get a chance to go. I had some prominent friends in Sarasota, you know, Art Ginsburg and Dennis, who were attorneys, and also they saw me play, and they thought it was a good idea to start getting some African-American players at the University of Florida. If they didn't have any, so, you know, I'd be able to fit in. Because, again, like I said, we had just integrated. We had a white school, and I was doing well there. And so they just said, hey, you should be able to go and do well at the University of Florida. But I had a problem because my senior year, I turned 19 before the school year. And that was made me ineligible to play. So they were instrumental in helping me to get a scholarship to go to Valley Forge Military Academy up in Wayne, Pennsylvania. And I played up there my senior year because of the fact that they were so prominent in helping me to, you know, finish up my high school career and interested in me going to the University of Florida. I thought that was a good thing to do, but I was recruited by Woody Hayes, and I took a visit up there, and I guess it was a long time to go because they had all that snow, and all I could see when I flew in was rooftop full of snow, and then when I got on, it was knee-deep full of snow, so I decided liquid sunshine would be better than that snow. So that's one reason why I came to University of Florida, and again, I wasn't concerned about the first, you know, who was signed first, it just wanted to be able to get us closer to home also, and that would get a chance for my parents to come see me if they decide to do so, or my friends that was in Sarasota, they have the opportunity to come and see me as opposed to going to Ohio State. So that was really the main emphasis of me going because of some prominent attorneys and friends that, you know, thought it would be a good idea for me to go to the University of Florida. And that's how I, you know, ended up at the University of Florida.
Chatting with Willie Jackson and of course, Leonard George. Leonard, even though you mentioned Florida had integrated earlier, they still were not. We were still not seeing young African Americans playing in sports. So, describe the atmosphere for you and Willie when you got down there.
Well, you know, like you said, university had only started admitting black students in 1958. So that was only 10 years before. And so, but we did have, you know, we weren't the first athletes. The first athletes was actually Ron Coleman and Johnny Brown. They were on the track team. And so they were there before us in 1968. And so that helped us to deal with a lot of stuff because they actually were the first athletes. And besides, we only had a few black students at that time, too. And so that all of that made that more of like a family atmosphere where we're coming in, well, You know, we got a lot of the press, but, you know, all these people had been there before trying to deal, you know, with the university, trying to deal with the social and educational issues. And so I would say that coming in there and helping us, you know, during that time was very important. Another thing I got to say is that we also got support for the black community in Gainesville. That's another thing that, you know, that we were able to tap into that helped make things easier for us. And so, and it's another thing, when you think about all of those teammates that we came into, they were not used to any black players or any black people, probably, period. Probably the people we came in, they were not used to, you know, black people. They probably didn't go to school with them or anything. This was a very difficult time where we were first. So I would say a combination of all those things helped me to go through it. And one thing I got to say, me and Willie coming together made it really nice, because today we're still friends, and at that time we were the best of friends, and that too helped it make it easier to deal with.
Talking to Leonard and Willie, let me ask you. Obviously, you agree with everything Leonard said. You were there with him, but how did you deal with the unknown? And let's be honest, 1968 wasn't a very friendly year in the South. It was a year of great tumult. It was the year that Dr. King, in April of that year, was assassinated in Memphis. What was that year like for you?
It was fairly troublesome, because of the fact that, you know, the uprising was there, and, you know, like, they wanted us to, you know, especially the black athletes, as, you know, we had a walkout during that time anyway, you know, like, I guess because of the unfair treatment that the blacks thought were unfavorable to the black students going to the University of Florida. So in other words, we did a walk-in, a walk-out. We set it in the president's office until, you know, like, they threw us out and so forth, and expelled most of the students and stuff like that. But the thing is, we just thought it was going to be much better, because of the fact we were for the cause. But again, because of the turmoil was going on, we said, it was best, because only it was a few students. It was more students than it were black athletes, and we were the only two on the football team. So we wanted to make sure that we continued that tradition. And like I said, whatever the cause was, we were for it. But then we also had the cause of the tradition of making sure that as black athletes at the University of Florida, fighting football teams would be able to have others that come to it. But I was able to get through it because of the fact that. I went to a military institution, a military school, and I was confronted with all kinds of, you know, white guys, and we played together. And even when during the integration, I was accustomed to, you know, like playing with whites, so it wasn't a big deal for me to come into the university to play. But again, it was very helpful, because once we got there, they were just excited or had the same problem and say, we need to get along with them as though, like, we got to get along with each other, because they figured that, you know, especially the upperclassmen, they say, hey, this is our last time we're going to be here, so we got to make the most of this. We go ahead and play and accept them and, you know, hope for the best, because we're teammates. And so that was one of the things that got us through, because of the fact that we had our teammates or the teammates, white teammates, to accept us and be on our side to help us get through the tradition that was, you know, like I said, the change that was going on during that time.
Listening to Willie Jackson and, of course, Leonard George, let me ask you, I know that teammates were there for you, but did you encounter difficulties just on campus, or even beyond that, when you traveled around to various cities in the SEC to play games.
Yeah, I remember in 1970 we went to Tuscaloosa in Alabama to play up there. And I would tell you, man, you can't believe that, you know, how many rebel flags there were. And, I mean, we were only the only two blacks on the bus and probably the only two in the stadium. And that was the first. And so that was something because, you know, of course we heard all these nasty words, you know. They would give they call you nigger. They would call you, you know, all kind of things. I mean, they had no, you know, nothing to hold them back. And this is the first time that we had to deal with this, you know, for the University of Florida. But when you go there and, you know, you're going to LSU, you're going to Mississippi and all this kind of stuff, that this is something when you see all of that and you realize that, you know, you're the only ones on the field and you're the first ones to be there. So that was something when that happened. And so what happened in 1970, I was a running back. And so I was able to, Doug Dickey put me in the game, and I was able to score my first touchdown for the University of Florida in Alabama. And so I was saying that, well, look, is there going to be trouble on that? These people obviously wouldn't be happy, you know, having to see your first Afro-American, you know, scoring a touchdown against them. So, but we went on to later say, well, look, this was a good thing, and so that was a very special moment.
How do you remember that time, Willie?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Basically the same, you know, like they tell us, you know, like we would have, the players would tell us all the things that happen or will happen when, you know, I guess they was trying to scare us or make us fearful when we went to Alabama, Georgia, LSU. And the thing is, LSU was kind of frightened because they had that big tiger right there going in. So that was one of the things. They let that tiger loose on, you know, we didn't know where. It was all in fun. You know, it was jest and it was all in fun because they would say, well, if the tiger get loose, and then, you know, like I see this commercial, you know, like they're talking about the Red Bull, and he said, look, I don't have to outrun the tiger, I just got to outrun you. So let's say, if the tiger get out, they ain't worried about him getting beat. But it was just a lot of things. You know, like they were doing it in jest, and it was. But again, the people didn't stand. It was not in jest for them. They was actually serious about the way they, you know, like they viewed us and the way they, and the names that they would call us and the things they would do, you know, want to do to us. Because again, there was no laws to say, you know, like the only thing was, you know, they kept them off the field from coming to get us. But other than that, we would have been just, a fair game for them. But again, it was one of those things that the players. say they have our backs for us. So it was about the same as Leonard said. Everything, you know, like could happen, would happen, did happen. But again, we had no face-to-face confrontation. You know, we always heard what was happening, what's going on. And because of the fact that we was on the field, we couldn't hear it all. But then again, you can imagine all the things that were said and stand. But like I said, when we was at home and we, you know, like some of our students would tell us what they were saying, you know, so we knew what was going on and understand because they were there and they were talking about us on the field. But that was the gist of the whole thing, you know, like our transition was pretty good because of the fact that the players accepted us and they wanted to work as much as we did.
Hold on, guys. We're going to take a break here and then look ahead and talk a little bit about how things changed when, by the time your kids got there, Willie, 20-some-odd years later. We are talking to Leonard George and Willie Jackson, two pioneers in the SEC who broke the color barrier for the University of Florida. Back with a few more minutes right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back with Leonard George and Willie Jackson talking about the events of 68, 69, 70, when they broke the color barrier. Willie, I'm interested. Back then, you were just young guys wanting an opportunity to play football, and hopefully that would lead to something else. Did you ever dream that you would become part of history and that we would be talking about it 52 years later?
No, I didn't. Thing was that, you know, we was just having fun because football for us at that time was just fun. And it didn't matter who was played with, as long as we was having fun doing it. And that we was excited about that. Thing is, you know, like they said, it's going to be, you know, because we were pioneers, you know, I never imagined that it would grow into something this big as to a worldly, a national thing that would be looked at for, you know, time to come, you know, like because of the fact that she did something that was, I guess, outstanding or the first to do something, especially in the South. And, you know, like at the time, it didn't seem like a big issue, but again, it was something big for the university and for the ones that were having us come in. But for us, it was just for fun. You know, I just had fun just being there, and I never thought about that, the thing that what it would do in the future. But now it's there. You know, I think it's been, you know, it's a great thing to do. And again, because of the fact that it's so profound, then, you know, like, I want to make sure it continues to be something in the minds of the people that's, you know, gone but not forgotten. You know, we was here, this is what we did, and we, you know, acknowledged for it. So this is a thing that, this is how I feel about it now. But back in then, it was just sort of a fun thing to do, and I didn't see it being this big. And again, it's a great contribution, I think.
Leonard, what has it meant to you to have your family appreciate all these many years later, and so many more than you had at the time, to understand what you and your friend Willie did, and how by doing that it made it easier for those who came after you to have a better experience?
Well, I would say it did because, you know, my parents were very proud of me. My friends were very proud of me. You know, they still talk about it today. And so it's something like Willie said, you know, at the time, you know, you're not thinking about all of this stuff. You're not, you know, you can't see it, you know, as it is. And you don't see it how maybe other people think about it. Because, you know, now, you know, we can look back and say, well, I guess we were the first. And that was very important. Like I said, what you wanted to do at that time, you wanted to make the team better, make the Gators better, and also get an education. And that was the one thing that we were both able to do. And so I think that is very important going forward. But I have to say that, you know, we come on the back of other people. It was only in 1954 in Brown versus the Board of Education that, you know, we even were allowed to go to the University of Florida. And not to mention that there was a lot of people before us, not necessarily athletes, but people were fighting very hard for integration and for equality. Like you said, it was only in April 4, 1968, when Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. And so what I'm saying, now we look back at it, you know, 50-some years, and we say, well, what we did was important, but we got to realize the people that worked so hard long before 1968 were the ones I would like to be able to give my props to.
Willie, before we wrap up, and I want to thank both of you for making the time. It's just fascinating and you know, quite enlightening to hear this. But Willie, you had two sons, I believe, that I know they played for Steve Spurrier at the University of Florida, were outstanding athletes. Did you ever have conversations with them? Because they had obviously a much easier time than you did.
So to speak, they had a much easier time because of the fact that they was able to get there and they had someone that, I guess, helped mentor them to get to that point. But again, you know, like those are the things that you would like for your kids to do, you know, have a good career and so forth and so on, so they can get out and make a good living for themselves. But with me, you know, like I was very supportive of them, you know, because whenever they had a game or something, I was there. And as a matter of fact, one of our teammates were their coach, John Clifford, and you know, he kind of like helped mentor them on. And I called him my second, you know, their second dad, because you know he would make sure they did the right thing. So you know, you want the kids to do well, but then you don't try to push them to do anything that you did. If they do that, and it was very, very rewarding, compliment to, you know, to them for going on, and you know, especially at the University of Florida, and being as successful as they were. You know, the thing was, we all were the same number 22, and that was a great accomplishment. And then again, because of the fact that each one of them, in their own right, did something that the university hadn't done before. They made, you know, like the SEC, and then maybe, you know, like in Canada, they did the, I guess it's the national championship game. So those are the things that you're proud of them doing, again, because of the fact that I was the first to help, you know, to get there, and then to see them, you know, following and doing it. It's been, you know, very, very rewarding. And, you know, I can't say enough about what has happened. And again, like Leonard had alluded to earlier, we were not the first. And then again, like I said, because of the fact that we stepped on somebody else's shoulder and kept going, they also probably able to step on our shoulder and keep going, which a lot of them are doing right now today, which is a great accomplishment that we can say that, okay, before there was none, and after there's great many of them, so that's doing well, and again, getting the education and making a good living for themselves and being upstanding citizens.
Willie and Leonard, thank you for making time, and we're so appreciative of what you've done and accomplished, and I'm just so thankful for the opportunity to be able to talk about it with both of you. Be well, and thank you so much again.
Thank you so much.
Really
thank you, Paul.
Oh, what a pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Leonard and Willie, just a riveting conversation about the way things were, and thankfully, you know, we can sit here and talk about it.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.